Coming live from a picturesque New England countryside as I take pictures of scenery for scouting purposes and realize I'm completely lost, this is Talking Hollywood, and I'm your host, Daniel Uhlenberg. With me today is Master Cinematographer and DP Director, Olivia Lucero.
I don't know that I would describe myself that way, but okay.
Well, it's the way that I wrote down in my intro, and can't really change on the spot because of nerves.
Well, yeah. It's too late, I guess.
Well, on that note... How do you feel about politics? What about origin-wise? You from around here? I managed to avoid that in the discussion we had beforehand.
Right. I have lived in the Valley pretty much my whole life, aside from going to college in Santa Barbara. But I've lived in the same house that I lived in when I was a newly born infant.
Oh.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, speaking of yourself... in your formative stages, at what point along that ride did you become interested in film?
That's a little complicated.
Weird time.
Good to hear. So as a kid, pretty much from as early as I can remember, I was an actress until I was about 11. So I grew up being used to being on set and... being used to the realm of film and how all of that works and seeing all the moving parts and stuff. And so I hadn't realized, but that had kind of garnered my attention from a very young age. And then for a while, I thought that I would be a marine biologist when I was like 12.
How do we all go through the marine biologist phase?
You know what? I don't know. I was obsessed with dolphins, so I blame that.
Yeah, it's probably... It's a dolphin. You put them in the tuna and then... Anyway, what would you consider your most challenging role as a child?
As a child?
Yeah.
Like as a child actress or just as a kid?
You know, just the role society makes you play.
I'm afraid I don't know how to answer that.
Well, it's free form. You can't answer incorrectly.
Okay, well, I mean, I remember being a stupid little kid and being like, but Mom, I just want to go play with my friends. I don't want to go work for 12 hours and go on auditions every day after school. I think I was an idiot for thinking that way now, because the whole reason I was able to afford college was because I was in commercials and random TV episodes and stuff and have been making residuals ever since. So, like...
Well, you can't really blame a lack of foresight on anything other than being a child when you're a child. So I think you're in the clear for that one. But not to go from talking Hollywood to actually investigating things that matter. Which filmmaker would you consider your primary influence?
See, you already know the answer to this question.
Yes, I do, but I want my mom at home to know, too.
Right. It's been the same answer since I was 12, when I first saw the movie Hot Fuzz, and it changed my life forever. I have been obsessed with Edgar Wright
ever since. Nick Frost. I thought it was Nick Frost.
But yes, I've been obsessed with Edgar Wright for the last 10 years of my life.
Excellent. I mean, like, what... So you must appreciate the importance of visual comedy.
Oh, 100%.
And how underutilized it is, yourself, you know, you being a cinematographer and a fan of Edgar Wright.
I mean, even though he's not a DP, he's still one of my biggest influences in terms of camera work and stuff, because nothing really looks like his films, except for people who make cheap, like, I don't know, copy his style. I always think that that's kind of dumb, but, you know, whatever, that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But he, I don't know, he has a very unique style with all the whip pans and all of the like quick zooms and all the transitions, and I don't know, I've never seen anything like it. Nobody does match cuts like him. Nobody has an editing style quite like his, and I shudder at the thought of being a DP on one of his films.
Well, it's, you know, I look forward to the day that I can say that I interviewed the DP of Edgar Wright's films on my show, like, 5 years ago. So you have 5 years to fill that role.
I don't know that I'll ever replace Bill Pope, because that man's a genius, but I can try.
Speaking of replacing Bill Pope, what was it like being in the filmmaking program at UCSB?
I had a great time. It was a theory-based major, but there were a lot of filmmaking classes, and I learned so much going to school there. They have this class called 106, and it lasts 2 quarters because UCSB is on the quarter system, and it happens once a year. And at the beginning of fall quarter, everyone gathers in Pollock Theater, which is like the big theater where most of the lectures are for the film major. Mm-hmm. And everybody stands in front, and there's a panel of professional people who like work in the film industry. And they listen to everybody's pitches, and there's usually about 15. And, you know, people will go up and pitch their film, everything from, you know, the budget, the general plot, you know, all that good stuff, how long they think it'll take to make it. And then at the beginning of the next week, the panel will have picked 4 films to be made. And so
out of approximately how many?
It kind of varies depending
not,
on the year.
Not approximate. It's usually, I need a specific number.
Let's see. 1 year it was 16. 1 year it was 14.
I was thinking triple digits. So even if that's, you know, just riffing off of my joke, that's a pretty good estimate.
I mean, there are other opportunities that people will take to make films. There's like other programs like 10-10-10, but I can get into that later. But yeah, 106 is probably one of the best learning experiences you can have because all the films have a budget of about $5,000 to $10,000 that you have to raise yourself.
Take a sip of water so I can spit it out.
And when the film gets picked, it's usually just the writer, director, and producer who are already set for the crew. And then nice. You have to build your crew from that point onward. So it kind of becomes a frenzy of everyone approaching these 4 groups of people being like, I've done this, this, and this, and I want to work on your film, and I can contribute this, and here's examples of my past work. Here's my portfolio. Here, take this video of things I've done before. And if you're lucky enough, they'll pick you to be a core crew member, and then you're enrolled in the class. Otherwise, you are labeled an intern on the project.
Do they say it just like that, their pitch? The, hey! Catch them in the bathroom.
I mean, that's how I did it.
Oh.
Not really.
I'm going to take that as legitimate.
But yeah, because of that class, I had my introduction to the filmmaking program there, and then eventually worked as a DP on a 106 film. And that was my first time ever DPing, which was crazy and stressful. But they also have like other opportunities, things like 10-10-10, which is part of Santa Barbara International Film Festival. So it's not necessarily through the school, but you have to be submitted through an advisor at your school. And they select 10 screenplays and 10 directors. And then, you know, they all have to pair up. And you have 10 days to make a 10-minute short film. So I worked on 2 10-10-10s. And one of them, I worked as a first AC, assistant camera. So, you know, I helped with swapping lenses and general camera support, setting up the Steadicam, all that. And then the second one I worked on it as a DP, but half of the film ended up having to be composite shots because it was a character talking to himself from 7 years in the future. So we had to shoot the same frame twice for pretty much every single scene so that they could be stitched together later. But that meant that in 10 days, and for a student film, this is insane. We had actually more like 6 days because you have to have time to edit. We had 130 setups.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a very stressful period of time in my life. I had to ditch a lot of class. I was sick. It was a great time.
Olivia, are you okay?
I've lost a part of my soul. I can say that much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what the entertainment industry does. or so I've heard. looking back on your first experience as a DP, like, how do you feel about your performance now that you have experience?
Oh, I mean, it was a mess, obviously. I mean, it was my first time being a DP. And granted, I had learned a lot from my lighting for cinematography class and from my other friends who were extremely talented DPs. They're like, those two things are pretty much where I learned everything I know. But I don't know. Looking back, I obviously made a lot of mistakes. I, at the beginning, wasn't super sure of how to head a department because I had to, you know, train a bunch of people to be grips and gaffers and electric department and all of that, because it was a lot of really green people. So those first few shoots we had were very hectic, especially because, so in the film, the first half of it probably takes place in the very short window of sunrise.
That's, wow.
And so for people who are listening who don't, I guess, really know things about filmmaking, if you're going for natural light and you're going for sunrise, that means you have about a 45-minute window to shoot half of a film. So it took us maybe 6 weekends to get all of the setups for that scene because it was just impossible to fight the sun. And all of our call times were at like 4:30 in the morning so that we could be set up by the time sunrise started. And then we would end up shooting until like midnight. So it was hectic.
Well, as long as you file a permit with NASA, you can get the sun to come up a little bit, you know, later.
If only I had known that.
Yeah, it's just a little tidbit, just a little cinema fun fact from from your host.
I'll be sure to keep that in mind next time.
Actually, speaking of Bob Pope, an interesting cinema fun fact that I do know about him is that, did you know that he actually went to UCSB?
No, I had no idea.
It's true. It's the truth.
Wow. Well, I can brag about that in the future, I guess.
Speaking of college, the people that you met there, do you, like, keep in touch with them now or work with them on projects? Or?
So they're all some of my best friends. So I just last night was hanging out with a bunch of them who graduated a year or two ago. I'm in about a month or two, I'm going to be moving in with four of them who graduated with me this year. And we all still work together. I've shot music videos with them, and whenever they need like help getting B-roll for other projects they're working on, if it's camera department related, they always know they can reach out to me and I'll always help.
Would you consider us friends?
Us?
Yeah.
Sure.
I need help filming something. And
I mean, I'm always down to shoot for anyone who needs the help, so.
Perfect. So, you know, I have to ask. Edgar Wright.
Yes.
How did you meet him?
Okay, so this is a bit of a long story. I don't want this to come off as bragging, but I'm like...
Brag away, please.
I'm kind of friends with him now. It's a strange thing for me still, because as I said, I've been obsessed with him for like 10 years of my life. But I met him twice before actually becoming friends with him. Once at an art gallery show that was dedicated to the Cornetto trilogy, and another time when he was randomly giving opening remarks for a horror film that his friend directed. And it was a Cine Family event, and I was like, oh, that sounds cool, I'll go. Oh, Edgar Wright is there, I'm definitely going. But in March, I was just, you know, hanging out with some of my friends in Santa Barbara. We were going to go see Logan. Great film, by the way.
It had its merits.
I am just scrolling through Twitter, you know, killing time before we're going to see the movie.
As people do.
Right. And I saw a tweet saying... from Edgar Wright, Santa Barbara locals, what are things that you would recommend to do, places to go to eat, et cetera, around here, like in the area? I immediately lost my mind, took a screenshot of it, sent it to all my friends, and was like, guys, I don't know why, but Edgar Wright is in town. So all my friends were freaking out. I can't tell if they were freaking out for me or if they were also like, oh my God, Edgar Wright is in town. Because I was known as like the crazy obsessed fan for a long time.
Not anymore?
I feel like I can't hold that title now that I know him because that would just be weird.
Well, you can be a crazy obsessed friend.
I guess.
it's interesting that he would be asking for suggestions for, you know, places to go around Santa Barbara because, again, cinema fun fact, Edgar Wright actually went to UCSB.
Shut up. He didn't, first of all. He did not.
That's debatable.
No, he told me about his college experience, so I'm like pretty sure he didn't go to UCSB.
Well, anyway.
Continuing with the story. My friend Leah, who is one of my best friends that I made in Santa Barbara, was like, oh, you should try like tweeting at him saying that we're on State Street and that we'd love to meet him or something. And I was like, that sounds crazy, but why not? And so I tweeted something saying like, oh, my friends and I are on State Street. We're huge fans. If you have the time, we'd love to meet you. About 30 minutes later, I was like, oh, you know, this sounds too desperate, so I deleted it. 30 seconds after I deleted it, he responded to it, saying, oh, I was just on State Street. And I was like, oh, no way, where? And then I put my phone down, and then he, like, private messaged me on Twitter so that it wouldn't, like, you know, leave a history on people's public feeds where they could stalk him.
Does Leah know she's an agent of fate?
Yes, she does now. But so he messaged me saying, like, oh, well, I just left, but I'm staying in the Montecito area. And it somehow just turned into a conversation. I'm still not sure how I was that lucky. And he was saying that he was going to be in town for the weekend. And I was like, well, if you have nothing to do, let me and my friends know. We'd love to treat you to a drink. He said, maybe. The next day, I was like, oh, I don't know if you're busy. I'm not trying to, you know, be pushy, but my friends and I are going out for a drink tonight at this bar. You're welcome to join if you have nothing to do. And he was like, oh, well, I'm going to see a movie, but the movie starts at 8, so it should be out by 10. I'll, like, message you afterward and I'll let you know. But I don't usually, you know, make a habit out of meeting strangers, so this is kind of weird. And I was like, oh, we're just some harmless film majors.
I don't usually make a habit out of meeting Edgar Wright, so I think we're...
we're on the same page here. So his movie gets out, and he's like, oh, what was the name of the bar? And I texted it to him, and he's like, oh, that's 400 feet away from my theater. So he walked over and was like, I'll stay for one drink. He ended up hanging out with us for like 3 hours and bought us 2 rounds of drinks. He was the nicest guy I've ever met. Super funny, super friendly. Surprisingly everything I thought he would be. And at the end of the night, he was like, he messaged all of us and was like, oh, give me your Twitter handles. I'll follow all of you. And so now we all just, like, have a direct line of access to contacting him. And he messaged us saying, like, thank you for a fabulous night. It was super fun. You guys were not at all weird, which was cool. And you were, like, 1,000 times more fun to hang out with than the movie I had just seen. And he also was saying, like, you know, let me know when you're in L.A. Like, I might be able to, you know, get lunch or something with you guys again. And then a week later, because it was spring break, we were like, oh, well, we're actually all in L.A. And he's like, oh, well, I'm going to this Donnie Darko 10th anniversary or 15th anniversary event.
Oh, so are we now.
And I was like, oh, no, it's okay. Like, if you have time before or after, like, that would be chill. And he's like, well, let me see if I can get tickets, but no promises. And he ended up taking us to, I'm totally bragging now, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you're done bragging, let's move on. No, please.
I don't know. He took us to, you know, the Donnie Darko event, and the director was there. The guy who played Frank the Rabbit was there.
Jake Gyllenhaal, who also went to UCSB. Cinema fun fact.
It wasn't Jake Gyllenhaal, and he did not go to UCSB.
I'm pretty sure I've seen Donnie Darko before, but let's move on.
But yeah, that was super fun, and he, you know, bought us another round of drinks because he was just like, no, you guys are poor college students. Why would I let you pay for your own things? That's ludicrous.
I like this guy.
I know. He's so friendly. It's insane. I am still not over it, and I don't think I ever will be.
He's really focused on the greater good.
Speaking of, he also invited us to the 10th anniversary screening of Hot Fuzz. So, you know, that was a high point in my life. We had reserved seats in the theater with our, like, names written on the seat.
I'm sorry that the best thing that life could possibly offer anyone has already happened so young.
Yeah. There's nowhere life can go but downhill from here, you know? I also got to see, like, an advanced screening of Baby Driver a few weeks before it came out. I'm really, like, milking everything I can get out of this, I guess.
I can't wait for that movie to come out. I'm going to see it opening night.
Oh, your jokes are terrible.
Jokes?
You know, came out June 28th.
Are you kidding?
No.
Well, that sucks. I was gonna say, because I've been looking up a few actual fun facts ahead of time, just to, you know, tell you in the middle of the show.
Oh God!
One of which, and I gotta try to remember the guy's name. But it was okay. It was your friend Leah. You know she went to UCSB.
Yes, I do know that.
See. Okay, so we actually have a question from somebody close to me who wishes to remain unnamed. What's the difference between a DP and a cinematographer?
So they are two terms for the same thing. DP, which is director of photography, means the same job title as cinematographer.
I'm glad I didn't ask that.
Yeah, they're both just, you know, the head of camera department, work closely with the director, lead the electric and grip and camera department, to help designing light for setups and all that good stuff. My dream goal in life.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a scenario.
Okay.
Okay. So picture yourself, in the middle of a jungle. You come across a pyramid. In the pyramid, you find an idol. That idol turns out to be a very valuable one, which, you know, you must turn into the government of that country. And they fly you from that place to, you know, the capital so that you can return the idol, you know, so that it can be put in museums. But in the flight, over what is some kind of large expanse of water, the airplane, you know, starts to fall apart. You jump out. You land on a desert island, you open your bag, you see three movies. What do you hope they are?
Hot Fuzz, Evil Dead 2, and American Werewolf in London.
Did you already know where I was going with that?
No, but those are my top three favorite movies.
You're good.
I have a top 25 list, so.
Okay, list them off. Rapid fire.
Oh, God.
Under pressure.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, I already said three. Kill Bill, Volume 1, and I guess Volume 2. Oh, my God. I don't do well under pressure.
I'm not going to make you do this.
Thank you. I mean, I have it written down somewhere if you really want to know what they are.
I do, but I'm also not going to make you, you know, go through your phone and then list them all off. A topic near and dear to me. It Follows. You said it wasn't your favorite.
No, it was not.
Can you justify that ludicrous statement?
I think it's great that creature features are kind of having a comeback. I am a huge fan of creature features. I love all the old classic Universal monster movies. Something that I think holds true more so with more modern horror films is if you don't actually see the creature in action, it comes off as more fearsome. Because a lot of what horror deals with is the fear of the unknown. And not knowing, like, what something's capabilities or true powers are.
In a way, you kind of don't know that with the creature as it is, though, because it's you know, unique to the film.
Well, for a long time, you don't really know until you... spoiler alert. Until you see a scene where the creature has sex with the guy that it's after and it kills the guy. That scene... It came up very campy.
Which is really sweet if you step outside our cultural norms and just think about the monster.
Who was disguised as the boy's mom.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. Never mind. So that's that scene, if it's cut out, do you like the film better?
I think it gets
like
a few more points.
I don't know. I love the whole not knowing what it is, where it came from, what its capabilities are. Just
I agree with all of that, but you see part of its capabilities, and that's kind of what makes it a little bit lackluster. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a great film. I said this earlier.
You're talking smack about its luster, so I don't know.
No. Hang on. Okay. There is a very large difference between whether or not a film is good and whether or not I like the film. So
very scholarly.
It is a great film, but it is not my favorite. I wouldn't put it in my top 10 of horror films.
Okay.
Which is my favorite genre.
Now let's say, you know, there's a fire in the great movie library that houses all of the movies and the internet doesn't exist. Only three horror movies remain, because I didn't give you a chance to list off, you know, three horror movies.
Well, two of the three movies I listed in that other scenario were horror
movies.
That's
why I made them three instead of you know, one.
Should I pick two films that weren't in that list?
Please.
Okay. The Thing.
Mm-hmm. The Thing, which version?
Obviously the 80s one. The 80s one is fantastic.
I mean, let's not be pedestrian here. We have to go with things that are older, so we don't seem too millennial.
Creature from the Black Lagoon. My third one. This is tough. I feel like I'm narrowing it down from a lot of options here. What's a film I always talk about? There's a lot of films I always talk about that I tell people that they need to see. Maybe The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original one, just because you need a good slasher, you know?
Huh. Interesting. Of course I disagree with you, but that's just because I'm a contrarian. But it's not about me. How did you feel about Cabin in the Woods?
Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up because it's a great, like, really meta take on, like, the tropes that haunt the horror genre.
Well, horror comedy is definitely my favorite, and I think that film did a fabulous job taking, like, all the things that are usually supposed to be genuinely terrifying and turning them on their head and making them ridiculous. The fact that it's, again, spoiler alert, this, like, mad scheme by a bunch of men in a control room who are trying to prevent the end of the world by using, kind of by chance, random creatures.
Yeah. And who was that actor that played, like, the disinterested kind of main guy, you know? It's...
I don't remember who the actor was. It's been two years since I've seen it. But...
like a funnier J.K. Simmons-looking type.
Yeah. But I don't know. I thought it was genius. I've never seen anything like that. It's ridiculous. It's the same thing as, like, Tucker and Dale.
I was about to ask you about that. Yes!
I don't know. I think if a genre can take the things that are usually ridiculous about it and turn them on their head, it's fantastic. I mean, that's part of the reason why I love Evil Dead 2 also. I mean, I'm sitting here wearing an Evil Dead 2 shirt. The movie is pretty much just a reboot of the first movie because it's the same main character coming back to the same cabin but not remembering any of the events that happened in the first movie. And he just... it's insanity, pure madness. Everything about it is crazy. Nothing makes sense. There's a lack of continuity. His hand becomes possessed, but just his hand, and he starts attacking it, and it's fighting him. He has to cut it off and replaces it with a chainsaw.
Well, that makes sense.
The, like, most memorable line from the movie is just him saying in a very, like, rough voice, "Groovy." Like, it doesn't get better than that.
That's true, actually. My father especially is a huge fan of that film, and he told me that the chainsaw that they used in the film to replace the guy's hand, actually, and this is a cinema fun fact, it went to UCSB.
Oh my God, I'm gonna kill you.
With a chainsaw? Because that's pretty groovy.
God, I should have seen that coming.
Yeah, I'm gonna fault you on that one. Given you enough chances.
But yes, I think it's a great movie. Anyone who hasn't seen Evil Dead 2, even though I've said some pretty, like, big things that happen in it, everyone should see it. It's fantastic and hilarious.
Are you shilling for Evil Dead on my show?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a good movie. And in the beginning of your, you know, filmmaking kind of... I'm talking about, like, the amateur era, so I'm not... I don't know...
Which I am still in.
No, let's... Look, you're partying with Edgar Wright. Let's not call you an amateur. What's one project you wish you could do a lot better than you did previously?
Definitely the 10-10-10, where we had to shoot everything twice because, I don't know, people keep telling me that it looks great, but I just really don't think it does. And I
think
I could do
it wonderful.
Better. Thank you, even though you've never seen it. It means a lot to me.
Well, I trust you.
Well, I don't know. I know I could have done a much better job. We didn't put enough time into pre-production. None of us were really sure what the vision of the film was supposed to be until we were halfway through shooting it. And then I had, like, a very different idea of what the director wanted, because we hadn't really communicated it well enough until we were on, like, day two or three. And she started saying, can we shoot this on the 24 just because I really like close-ups on a wide lens? And I was like, I mean, we can, but we haven't shot the rest of the film like that, so it might look weird if just it randomly happens sometimes and other times it doesn't. And she was going for very, like, Wes Anderson-style...
College.
Well, okay, here's the thing. She wasn't trying to blatantly rip it off, but everyone does have their influences. I know that Edgar Wright is one of mine, so a lot of the ways I think about you know, visuals in a film kind of are based on, like, Sam Raimi, Edgar Wright, John Carpenter, stuff like that, because those are my biggest influences.
Good
one
choices.
Of her biggest, thank you. One of her biggest influences was Wes Anderson, I guess. And I had a co-DP for the film, just because I was DPing another film at the same time, which I don't recommend. Horrible idea. He was clearly going for more like Tarantino style vibes. So I don't know. I can just very clearly see all these mismatched,
you know,
influences.
I can see where that would go wrong, but at the same time, I would absolutely love to see a film that is both Tarantino and Wes Anderson.
Like, yeah, those two things really don't go together.
The Quirky Murders or something along those lines.
I mean, that already just sounds like either one of them on their own.
Let's make it outside of the studio. Okay, so there's an earthquake.
Okay, I'm experiencing a lot of doom in my life, apparently.
Well, no, these are all hypotheticals.
Okay.
You can't confuse them with reality.
Oh, thank you for telling me. I would have had a very bad day otherwise.
Apparently.
Yeah.
There's an earthquake, and a crack opens, you know, like 5 feet in front of you. The earth splits into fragments, and the one fragment that you are on that remains, that hasn't floated out into space, has your one ideal shooting location. Where would it be?
I've always wanted to shoot something in the old zoo in Griffith Park. I feel like that would make for a great horror movie location.
It would, yeah. It's got cages, I mean.
It's got cages. It's full of graffiti. It's gross and dingy. Everything is broken. If you go at night, it's impossible to see 2 feet ahead of you. I don't know. I think I could make a great horror movie there.
It sounds like my room, honestly.
That is unlucky.
Yeah. Well, it's all my fault.
You graffiti your room?
You know, it's the aesthetic that I'm going for.
I feel like your parents wouldn't be okay with that.
Oh, they're not. Anyway, that appears to be the time that we have. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Once again, I am Daniel Uhlenberg, and you've been listening to kpcradio.com.